It's The Adventures of Indiana Jim, number 36, for February 19th, 2010. In this episode, talking about Twitter, threaded conversations, a review of Hootsuite, and don't take the social out of my social media, plus your feedback.
And now, coming to you not exactly live from
the cliffs of insanity,
a man who needs no introduction.
Don't open that! It's an alien planet! Is there air? You don't know!
That intrepid arch-geekologist, Indiana Jim.
You have chosen wise.
Don't tell me you've never heard of me.
I'll explain, and I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
Let me put it this way. Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
You, boy, are arrogant, hot-tempered, entirely too bold.
I like that. Reminds me of me.
Wouldn't you're the plucky comic relief? Did you ever think about that?
I don't believe I ever seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
Why are you listening to this fella? May I imagine he's wearing a costume, not a uniform.
I have entertained in all the courts of Europe and speak a ready wit in their every tongue.
I told you I was famous.
Guten Tag and bienvenidos. I am your host, Indiana Jim. The snow days have ended, at least for this week. Yeah, we have pretty much Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. School was shut straight down. Of course, Monday was President's Day, but, you know, whatever. Thursday was a two-hour delay. Today, though, was a normal weekday. On a Friday, finally. And we're supposed to get more snow coming up on Sunday. Isn't that great? No, it's not. Have not been able to get a lot of work done, obviously, on creative pursuits with the Munchkins at home. I have been editing, splicing, and choosing the best takes for the Last Guardians lines that I have in the tank. So that's been fun, and it's been I've been making some progress there. Got a couple roles still waiting on people going through life. Life happens, like Dave Ramsey says, and we're here to talk about it. Talk about you and your money. Wait, wrong show. I'm sorry. Well, in this episode, it's pretty much all about Twitter. I do have some feedback to get to, and of course, we will have the Slice of Sci-Fi headlines. What I want to talk about right now are two things, basically, just to get them out of the way, two bits of news, a little bit of news, and could be old news to you, but the 49ers Fancast, the other podcast that I produce, has joined Farpoint Media. If you go to farpointmedia.com and you look up the Sports and Recreation channel, you will see the 49ers Fancast there. Now, of course, it is a very niche little show. And probably averaging about 280 to 300 listeners, depending on what week it is. And I obviously need to get another episode of that out. We've got the draft coming up and review the Super Bowl that just happened recently that I haven't been able to respond to because I've had kids in the house. Yeah, it's hard to record when you have children in the house. It really, really is. And it's also hard when you're lazy, like me. So there is that bit of news. And the other thing is, we are soon going to be starting a podcast of the short fiction that's out there for the Wars universe, the Decipher's card game that I am writing for in their universe. There are 21 short stories that were written for various marketing magazine-type things. By that I mean they appeared in magazines and product and other types of things. So, anyway, we've got these 21 short stories, which are going to be brought to you and read to you by some of your favorite podcast novelists out there. And first and foremost among them, you may recall that Michael A. Stackpole sort of got the universe going with 6 short stories. Michael A. Stackpole himself will be reading 2 of his short stories that he wrote for the Wars universe. And I'm very excited about that because he's a New York Times bestselling author. He has a great reading voice. And I figured, you know, why not kick off the podcast with the guy who kicked off the short fiction, sort of bringing it back to the beginning a little bit. Some of the other ones that will be appearing will be Phil Rossi, Philippa Ballantyne, Christiana Ellis. And there's a couple more bigger names we're hoping on. One had to bow out because he's very, very busy. You may recall he recently released Personal Effects Dark Art and is currently working on the launch for Seventh Son with St. Martin's Press. That would be, of course, J.C. Hutchins, who is a busy, busy man, and we wish him all the best. Was unable to corral J.C. into doing this. However, two other names that we're waiting on for spring, because they are also busy, busy men, are Scott Sigler and... I can't even... Why isn't it coming? Seth Harwood, thank you. Whew! Brain, kick into gear. It's 10:50. It's time to start, right? So we're going to wait on those two guys. They are busy, busy men, but we're hoping that they can free up some time in the spring. And so basically, we've got some big names that want to help out with this. And what we'll probably do is also, I will perhaps record one, and Nathan Butler will probably record one. And I may see if I can, you know, corral another individual into this. Or maybe a couple. I don't know. I've got a couple other people in mind. But anyway, some of the other ones, though, we are going, I would like to produce sort of with narration and guest voices. So be on the lookout for that. That's a lot of work for me to get going on, but I'm going to try, and we're going to get this going. So anyway, I just wanted to put that out there and let you know it was coming down the pike. Now, as far as when it's coming, I have really no idea. There's really no benchmark on this. We're going to try to aim for the spring. My publisher, Josh Radke with Grail Quest Books, would like to get a Grail Quest Books podcast going. But the logistics are kind of, well, difficult for them to get going right now. So I don't really have the time to produce another podcast. But you know how that works sometimes. I mean, I've got to get stuff going for the short stories, and I've got my own podcast novel I'm working on. I've got this show. I've got the 49ers fan cast. I have a wife and three kids who apparently like me or something. It's weird. I don't get it. But it is what it is, right? That's the expression, and that's what we're going with. Anyway, enough blather from me. It's time for the Slice of Sci-Fi Headlines. Well, those of you who loved the game StarCraft are in for a treat. The long wait for StarCraft II may be just about over. Blizzard announced that beta testing for the game will begin later this month. The news was revealed during the company's fourth quarter results conference call. The beta testing will be done on a worldwide basis, according to the company. The full game is expected to be released sometime this year. During the conference call, they also stated that 2010 will be the biggest in Blizzard's history. It's the first time in 12 years that they plan to release two major games in a year. There's also another new expansion for World of Warcraft on the horizon. Now, I never played StarCraft, but I do know that the people who played it really, really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun for a lot of people, and I know that there's plenty of people that are excited about this thing returning. Could Christopher Nolan oversee Superman? Christopher Nolan resurrected the Batman franchise. Now it appears that Warner Brothers may want him to try resurrecting the Man of Steel on the big screen. Deadline Hollywood reports that Warner would like Nolan and the... Deadline Hollywood reports that Warner would like Nolan and the creative team behind Batman Begins and The Dark Knight to take a godfather role in shepherding Superman back to the silver screen. The team would serve as a sounding board for ideas on the project. The intention appears to be to keep Superman Returns director Bryan Singer and star Brandon Routh involved, but not make the next film a sequel. Quote, "We know what we don't want to do, but we don't know what we want to do," a studio source told the website. "We learned a lot from the last movie, and we want to get it right this time." Another insider is quoted as saying Warner Brothers doesn't have a handle on it yet. They need to hear a great story that makes sense. Warner Brothers are keen to get a Superman movie into production shortly before more rights to the character revert to the estates of the Man of Steel's creators, Jerome Siegel and Joe Shuster, in 2013. And I'm not sure how I feel about this. Because really, Superman has always been probably my favorite superhero, but I think that's mainly just because I grew up on the Christopher Reeve movies, and, you know, I just have a special place in my heart for those. I was never a comic book reader, and so, you know, I don't really toe the same line that the comic book fans do and what they want and what they want to see and all the different storylines and takes on the character and yada, 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 yada. I really don't care, but this is more indicative of a larger problem in Hollywood. And we complain that they can't get any original ideas. Why does Superman need yet another reboot? Now, I can see if they don't want to make a sequel, they go back and make a prequel, basically redoing the original. But does it really make sense? Because the idea was they're taking off of the first two movies. Do we really want to see him fight General Zod again? That becomes a problem to me. I think they do need to progress further, because I thought Singer did a really good job with Superman Returns. I thought they established something, but, you know, if they want to reboot it again, you know, this is just crazy. I mean, we just had this movie come out, what was it, 2008 maybe, I guess? 2007, I don't even remember exactly, but, and already we want to reboot it. I mean, I can see them rebooting old movies, but then, you know, some of these newer reboots are starting to get ridiculous. I mean, the Batman reboot, it was good. I'll give them that. It was outstanding. How much better can they really make Superman? I don't know. Fight more aliens, I guess. That's more kind of what he used to do in the old days. Yeah, the other one, the Spider-Man thing. I mean, we just had three Spider-Man movies, and they want to reboot it already. The reboot thing is just getting old. I mean, you talk about, you know, no original ideas in Hollywood. At least when they reboot something, it used to be they reboot something old. You know, when they rebooted Star Trek, it at least had been, you know, more than a decade since the last Star Trek movie. And it had been a long time since Captain Kirk last appeared on the silver screen. So at least there was that. You know, now we're rebooting stuff that's only nine years old. I just don't get it. It's ridiculous to me. But then again, really, nothing Hollywood does makes sense anymore. It makes dollars. There was a poll question up on sliceofsci-fi.com recently. Inspired by a comment on a recent voicemail show, we ask you the question, would you rather have no sci-fi or fantasy shows on TV, or would you rather have bad genre shows on, or cheesy, it says. Cast your vote and tell us what you think in the comments. And the results of the poll so far are 180 votes for bad or cheesy sci-fi or fantasy shows on TV, 89 votes for no sci-fi or fantasy shows on TV, and here's some of the comments. Cheesy, that means no Lost in Space, Land of the Lost, Land of the Giants, Doctor Who, old 60s, 70s rubbery set ones. Buck Rogers, come on, the 70s Buck Rogers was full of cheese. Man from Atlantis, Red Dwarf, etc., etc., etc. Well, Red Dwarf is a comedy, so it's supposed to be cheesy. But really, it's not really about cheesy, because Chuck is cheesy, but it's cool. It's about quality, I think, because Chuck is quality. We need bad sci-fi. It is part of the natural cycle of things. Amazing, okay, making fun of itself, bad, nothing, then amazing all over again. We went through a drought before Battlestar, and we are in the okay. Deal with it, people. I don't know what in the okay. Are we in the UK, maybe? No, maybe we're in the okay. If there's cheese out there, it means there's most likely some good, serious stuff, too. Perhaps. I'd settle for a few precious pearls, then a shovel full of sand. I like that comment. A little cheese never hurt anything, anyone. Anything is better than hokey sitcoms and chick flicks. I don't know, dude. I'd rather watch 2.5 Men or 27 Dresses than I would want to watch Mansquito or Sharktopus. I mean, seriously. Sam Sloan says, who doesn't like to cut the cheese every now and then? Ha ha. And the original voicemailer says, that was the point of my voicemail. The cheesy stuff has the potential to become cult classics, which inspire others to develop the next big classic sci-fi. Even though I find Flash Gordon, to be unwatchable, I consider it a great way to get people thinking about how to make it better. Maybe we should subject Hollywood screenwriters to repeat versions of Gordon in an attempt to get away from the remake meme. Although that just brings up an additional topic. We should probably remake Flash Gordon. And I don't mean the stupid TV show. I mean the original movie. We should redo that one with Mark Sanchez starring as Flash Gordon, the Jets quarterback. Maybe not. Why is Bad and Cheesy on the same ticket? A good show without cheese, BSG. A good show with cheese, Firefly, Star Trek, Farscape. Some of your pools are too biased not to allow a most correct answer. Firefly, Star Trek, Farscape. Now, Farscape was a ball of cheese, and I hate Farscape. I can't stand watching Muppets in my sci-fi. You know, I'd rather watch Pigs in Space than watch Farscape, honestly, because the Muppets are funnier. No. And then Firefly, it's not really cheesy. It's witty banter. It wasn't cheesy. It was humorous. It wasn't cheesy at all. If there is no sci-fi on TV or on sci-fi, then the studios have proof that there is no audience. Is there any sci-fi on we should watch and really support the better stuff? No. I do not agree that you support bad sci-fi with your watching. Why do you want to waste time watching crap like Sharktopus? Because that's what you're going to get. That's basically the premise of this comment, is that we should support it. No, we shouldn't. We should vote with our viewership and our dollars. And if our dollars read quality sci-fi more than it watches crappy sci-fi, guess what? They might make good sci-fi on TV. Now, I don't know how good Flash Forward is on TV, but I understand Robert J. Sawyer is brilliant, and I understand Flash Forward was brilliant. I'd rather have brilliant than crap, because inevitably, sci-fi TV turns to crap because studio executives get involved. Hello, heroes. I mean, maybe it's not the executives. Maybe they're just bad writing. I don't know. Let's see. I'd settle for cheesy sci-fi, but even that is scarce. It's all Bigfoot Ate My Leg Off or Sharktopus. Yes. For all who wanted just the cheese, you can have it. However, we can debate on what is cheesy and what is quality. I see it as yin and yang. You actually cannot have one without the other. There was a time when TV carried everything but sci-fi and fantasy. Then along came The Twilight Zone and Outer Limits, followed much later by Star Trek. The imagination and delight of endless possibilities blossomed. I list these as pivotal in my consciousness. Yours, of course, will differ. Given the choice of, say, bad food or no food, well, one must eat to survive. However, if no quality sci-fi or fantasy is available on TV, then one can go to any of numerous sources to find it, including the rental of same. There is no good reason to waste one's time and submit one's mental health to a malnutritious show. That's a really good point. And here's the thing. We're supposed to be the creative types. Okay, we're the geeks. We're the, you know, actual leaders behind the losers from high school who thought they were important. But here's the thing. As Monk would say, are we really slaves to the gatekeepers still? I mean, after all the work we've done to promote podcasting and free content and real creators who aren't slaves to the gatekeepers, we're still a slave to the gatekeepers. We still demand that TV give us something. I don't understand the fascination with TV anymore. I really don't. Maybe, is it my age? I don't think so, because a lot of the commenters on here are my age, are my generation. Why do I differ so much from my generation that I can't stand to watch what's on TV? And yeah, there's a lot of crap, but you know, I'm not just going to go watch sci-fi just because it's sci-fi. I'm not going to watch something that's fantasy just because it's fantasy if it's garbage. That's why I quit watching Legend of the Seeker. That's why I quit reading the Sword of Truth novels. Okay, because I don't like garbage, and I'm not going to subject myself to garbage on purpose. If it's garbage, I'm going to quit watching. Human Target is actually a really good show, but I'm not watching it because it doesn't do enough for me to want to say, yes, I must sit myself in front of this television, or yes, I must sit in front of my computer and just watch a recorded episode of this show, you know, just to keep up with it. I, you know, I'm not a slave to the gatekeepers. I'm not going to say this is all they're giving me, so that's what I'm going to watch. And there's that mentality that just is rampant in geek culture. And I didn't mean to have a big long rant, but that's my opinion, and that's how I feel about it. Now, Here's another headline. Google upgrading Gmail to challenge Facebook. And you all know what this is about. This is about that ridiculous Google buzz. In an attempt to challenge Facebook's social network dominance, Google announced that it will offer a new version of Gmail that incorporates more social networking functions. Included in the upgrade will be the incorporation of photos and videos, as well as the ability to update your status. Google will hold a press conference at its Mountain View, California headquarters today, which was February 9th, to show off the new features. Let's see here. That Google would feel the heat from Facebook makes sense. Many former Google executives now work at Facebook, including COO Sheryl Sandberg, who at Google helped build the lucrative AdWords pay-per-click ad program. And Facebook has a similar pay-per-click program now. Let's see. Facebook invites members to share photos, videos, and status updates on their personalized homepages. Advertisers reach out there with ads that are targeted by age, gender, location, and more. Wedding photographers, for instance, can reach out to women in a specific zip code who are engaged to be married. Initially, quote, Google misunderstood social media and its significance, says Greg Sterling, an analyst at Sterling Market Intelligence. They've got the religion now and have been trying ever since to add more social utility. Social is how the web has evolved. Yet he thinks that bringing social tools to Gmail doesn't make sense. Gmail is a good product as it is. I'm not sure these tools add anything except to make it more bloated. Yeah, you know, my opinion is, I don't really care. I like that it's embedded in your Gmail, but it just creates this glut of conversation. And I don't want these conversations flooding my inbox. You know, I've turned it off because I just don't want to go there. I don't need more, you know, and who needs more? And there's lots of people that think this is terrific, but it's just the same old thing. It really is. I need someone to tell me why Google Buzz is better, because I turned it off pretty much right away. I mean, I posted a couple messages, but it essentially is like Twitter. It does better with threaded conversations, so in that regard, it's like Facebook with its threaded conversations. We're going to be talking more about threaded conversations here on this show. And I just, you know, I don't know. It just seems to me like more of the same. And I don't want it flooding my email. I guess I just, you know, maybe I'm weird that way. But I need you to tell me what you think about Google Buzz. If you've had any experience with it, please call 206-666-2826 and get a hold of the voicemail line for The Adventures of Indiana Jim. So coming up, we're going to be talking about Twitter and Hootsuite and all the different kinds of people out there. Don't take the social out of my social media. Who are you people? That's coming up next here on The Adventures of Indiana Jim.
So, have you heard from T?
He's taking it day by day. Focusing on what's important right now.
Gotta be tough. Raising a kid on your own and all? I mean, I got two. It's not cheap raising them.
Yeah, but T's employed now. I'm sure he's gonna be fine.
That's it. He's a social media professional now.
Oh, frack. We gotta do something to help that kid.
On the 27th of February 2010 at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, members of the social media community are holding an auction to benefit T's 5-year-old daughter, known in our circles as Sonic Boom.
We want to show a little girl that while her life has changed, that her opportunities are limitless.
Please join us in celebrating the future of Sonic Boom. We want to make sure she's supported through social media before the teat that her daddy's sucking at runs dry. Please visit www.theboomeffect.org for more information.
Wow, I don't know if that promo is disturbing or funny or what it is, but Anyway, I hope you'll be there and I hope you will show your support. Now, what we're talking about today is Twitter. And I want to ask you, what's the next big thing with Twitter? Because there's a lot of people saying it's threaded conversations. And I wonder about that because, in my opinion, I don't know that that's what we want out of Twitter. You know, we have a conversation with somebody, and I get the idea that, you know, you don't want to have to scroll back through hours and hours of tweets, especially if you're like me, and, you know, you're up in the 17,000 tweet range. I'm getting close. I'm not one for milestones. I don't keep track of that. Occasionally I look up and go, oh, wow, that's a lot of tweets. But, and I see this useful in something like Hootsuite. It's very easy. You click the reply button, and inside Hootsuite, you know, you can go to, it shows, you know, show conversation. And that's cool. But then, and I get this from listening to Cliff Ravenscraft over at podcastanswerman.com. Also does the podcast Social Media Serenity. He does the Lost podcast. He does a lot, and he makes a living doing it. Oh, to be Cliff Ravenscraft. Anyway, the point is that Cliff has been going on and on about threaded conversations inside of the website, inside of the actual logic of the way Twitter works, and not just in a third-party platform like Hootsuite or like TweetDeck or like any of the other ones out there. But his thing isn't just, you know, someone replies to your tweet using that button, but also the idea that in that reply, anyone else who replies to that message or the replies of that message kind of all get threaded together so that you can follow the line of the conversation. But I have to wonder, isn't that what message boards are for? I mean, really, if you're going to have that much of a discussion, shouldn't you take it to a different platform? I know we all want to stay in one place and go, oh, let's just do this. And so now this is something that Cliff loves about Google Buzz, is because right inside his Gmail, he can have his threaded conversations and have a whole lot of fun. And I don't look at Twitter as a place to have threaded conversations. You know, it's learn to say what you got to say in 140 characters or less. Make sure it's relevant to everybody else around you. And it doesn't matter if it's threaded because everyone is involved in the conversation. And that's the problem, I think, with threaded conversations. I see is that isolation. And Twitter is about bringing everybody into the same room. It's like having a big conversation with the whole world in the same building. And if you start bringing in threaded conversations, it's, oh, let's have a conversation over here. Let's have a side conversation over here. You're not benefiting the rest of Twitter. You're not saying anything that's going to be of value. And this is one of the things that people have a problem with Twitter coming into it, is I don't want to tweet every time I'm having a sandwich. That's not the point about Twitter. And I think everybody who uses Twitter knows that that's not the purpose of Twitter. And there's lots of different purposes that people use Twitter for, and we'll get into that a little bit later when we're talking about don't take the social out of my social media. How big are threaded conversations to you? Are they that important inside Twitter? Or do you have other places like Facebook and now Google Buzz and other things, message boards, Google Reader maybe, and your blog comments on your blog? Do you have other places that you feel threaded conversations are more important? Or do you think that Twitter should make it work? And one of the problems is the beauty about the at replies and the DMs is all you have to do is put in one character to send that reply or to send that direct message. With a third-party platform, you have to click a button. You have to click a button for it to track. And inside the Twitter.com website, I'm sure they can add the reply function and have it show threaded conversations. And there's probably, you know, a small alteration to the code, I would imagine. I don't know. I know nothing about the way Twitter works. Does it behoove Twitter to do that? Or is it like anything, you know, let the third-party apps take control? Because most people don't use Twitter.com web interface for their tweets. Now, the mainstream people do. The mainstream casual users will get on there and make a tweet and then go about their business. But the main people who use Twitter on a regular basis all the time, like myself, like someone like T. Morris, like someone like J.C. Hutchins, like some of these people out there, Scott Roche, like some of these people, we use Twitter a lot. And third-party applications make the use of Twitter easier. So in my view, going to the web, twitter.com, and using the web interface for your actual tweeting is sort of a basic level usage type thing. Twitter doesn't really have a business plan. They're not a profit corporation, really. So to me, let twitter.com remain basic. Let the third-party applications provide the services that people want with Twitter. At least that's my opinion anyway. Now, I've talked about Hootsuite a little bit, and if you haven't seen Hootsuite, it's a really, really unique third-party app. It's web-based, so it kind of, I guess it works off Java or something. I don't know. but basically, it's like TweetDeck in a lot of ways. You can have different columns for your different lists. And that's the thing about Hootsuite is it uses the list that you've already established inside of Twitter. And I kind of like that better than the old groups and TweetDeck, because the lists, it goes with you because it's embedded into Twitter. The groups are a part of your TweetDeck. So if you have a different, you know, if you have TweetDeck on a different PC, you know, you got to import all your groups from the other TweetDeck. With Hootsuite, you can log on anywhere, access the same lists. Your Hootsuite account remains the same, so all your settings are there no matter where you log in, all over the world, wherever there is internet. The problem that I have with Hootsuite, one problem is, you can't change the color scheme. It's pretty much a light blue, white, and green thing. Your tweets appear on a white field, black text. Your links are blue. Your usernames are green, kind of a dark green. It's okay. I hope that they introduce color changes down the road, but for now, it works pretty well. You can set your tweets to send later. You can set a timer on your tweets if you have a particular thing that you want to say. Like, Heather Welliver could use Hootsuite to send out her Make-A-Wish tweet every day at 11:11 without fail. In fact, I should tweet that to her right now. So if you have something that you send every day, or if you have a quote, you know, you send out a quote every morning, say, when you get your day started, one of those inspirational type deals. You can set a timer, set it on the timer the night before, so you don't have to worry about setting that, you know, worry about doing that yourself. It'll take care of it for you ahead of time. You can access a lot of different social networks. I know I can send out my Facebook status as well as my tweets. If I want to tweet and set my Facebook status, it's real easy. You put the text in the box, and then you just click your user account. So I can click Indiana Jim, and I can click Jim Perry over at Facebook, and it'll send that tweet and that Facebook status update through Hootsuite. If you want to send a Facebook status update by itself, you just plug it in there. It doesn't limit your characters. It just tells you how many characters you're at, so it doesn't bring up a error or anything. It's really been a lot of fun to work with, and I pretty much use it constantly now. One of the problems, though, is it occasionally runs into an API issue more often than TweetDeck does, and so sometimes I'll be switching back and forth between Hootsuite and TweetDeck depending on performance, but overall, Hootsuite works really well. I'm trying to think if there's anything else unique. It has tabs, so I can view just the columns for Indiana Jim, and then I can click the other tab, and I can see all the columns for 49ers Fancast if I want to talk football or whatever. And I'm reading my Fancast tweets now. I don't need to look at that. So anyway, I really like Hootsuite. You can change how many columns appear on your screen by clicking a little slider. If you want to see only three, it automatically sizes the columns to show you just three or just one or whatever you want. It's got a handy dandy little search thingy, so you can search all the stuff in your Hootsuite. So I like it. You can get a thumbnail preview of picks or websites by just mousing over. Again, when you click the reply button, you will have a sort of a threaded conversation with whoever it is you're talking about. It helps you kind of keep track of your own conversations without being too much of that isolationist type deal. because your tweets are still seen by everybody. And to me, if you're going to reply to somebody, it should still benefit the entire community, as I've already said before. Now, let me go back into Hootsuite here. One of the issues I have, and Cliff Ravenscraft talks about this a lot, because he is really successful with his subscription services for premium content. There's a lot of people actively engaged in his community who subscribe for the additional content. He's very good at producing podcasts, and I don't begrudge anybody for doing that at all, because he's taken a legitimate business model and people are paying for it. And if people are going to pay for it, you have every right to charge for it. Now, that said, he routinely will complain that Twitter has no real business model, that Twitter does not have a profit game plan. And he believes that very strongly that a company should charge for outstanding services that it provides. And Twitter should provide a premium, some sort of premium service that people can upgrade to and subscribe to. And I just don't know how much I agree with that. I think a company ought to be allowed to do whatever the heck they want. If they want to provide a free service, I appreciate the free service. I see no reason why they ought to be for profit necessarily. Now, the idea there, I think, is the capitalist idea that if you're going for profit, then you're going to be there for a while. You're charging money, which means you're going to be making a profit, which means you're going to have the money to continue your services. And I think his fear is that without a legitimate business model, without a profit model, Twitter's going to end up going away. But it's not. There are too many people now that rely on it for it to really need that profit base. And there's been talk, of course, about Twitter going to advertising or whatever, but I see no reason why it can't keep going like it is. I see no reason why it has to advertise, because so many people use it. People aren't going to want to see it go away anytime soon. So let's move on. Let's get to the really fun part of today's episode. Don't take the social out of my social media. Who are the people abusing Twitter? Who are the people making it not fun? And let's start with the spammers. The spammers are the people that have a product or service to sell you. Their profile background has links and pictures, and it looks all slick and nice, and they tout themselves as social marketing gurus. Only they don't provide anything in the social sphere except links, that's right, to their own website, their own product, stuff that pretty much just touts themselves. The spammers follow you in hopes that you will follow them and follow their random, constant stream of self-promotion. These spammers are sick and self-absorbed and oftentimes don't actually provide anything. They're just trying to sell you something, and it might not actually be good. But you'd think that maybe someone who touts themselves, especially as these social media experts, would actually provide some value in the social media by being social instead of just using Twitter as an advertising service. If all you do is use Twitter for an advertising service, you fail. The next one is the linkers. The linkers do nothing but provide links to everything under the sun. Any particular story that they think is of value, they will provide a link for. These people have page upon page upon page upon page of short tweets with a blip or a snurl or a whatever kind of short URL, a tiny URL perhaps, to a random story out on the internet, not realizing that if you were had any interest in that story whatsoever, you've probably already Googled for it in the first place. These linkers also provide no value in the social media sphere by being social. They are simply broadcasting. Hey, dude, check this out. Yeah, you got clothes on under that trench coat, Mr. Watch Salesman? Sorry. The next ones are the infomercials. These people don't just have a product to sell. They also provide links to topics about the product they sell. They provide links to stories on the internet about people using certain things that resemble the product they sell. They also provide links to stories on the internet about people struggling with the competitor's product. These infomercials will tell you, hey, struggling to sleep nights? Try blah, 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 blah. And then they'll come at it from a different angle, telling you to try blah, 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 blah. Of course, you will find at replies in their stream saying, thanks for the follow. Try blah, 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 blah. Yes, the infomercials aren't quite as bad. Well, yes, they are. They're worse than the spammers and the linkers because they do both and they pretend to be social. They're not actually advertising. They're pretending that they're not actually advertising and expecting you to buy it. I'm sorry, I don't buy it at all. The next one is the quoter. The quoter provides nothing but inspirational quotes, hoping that you'll see some sort of value by having them in your stream. Perhaps their tweets provide you with some sort of zen during your day and help you to focus on what's most important. Only problem is, they are providing no social media value by being social. What they are doing is just sort of trying to be there, trying to be relevant, trying to be that fly on the wall without actually engaging in any conversation whatsoever. Now, maybe you like the quotes that they post. Personally, if I wanted a quote, I'd go get one off of Google. I'd type inspirational quote. In fact, let me try that right now. Let's see what happens when I go here. And let's I Google here. Let's see. Wow, I typed insp and I got inspirational quotes. Popular quotes of the day. inspirationalquotes.info, inspirationalquotesforyou.com, great-inspirational-quotes.com, finestquotes.com. Wow, lots of results, but let's see what's here on inspirational-quotes.com. If Chrome will. Oh, inspiring quotes. Let's go with leadership. Leadership quotations. Do not follow where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path and leave a trail. Attributed to Harold R. McAlenden, also attributed to Emerson. Leadership, the art of getting someone else to do something you want done because he wants to do it. Dwight D. Eisenhower. I could go on, but, you know, the quoters just don't really provide anything to me. The next category is the shouter. All they have is something to say about themselves, usually with an exclamation point, and they don't really say much, just sort of shout about what they're doing. I'm having a sandwich. Going to the store. Driving my car. If you ever seen the Trouble with Twitters video, it's very, very entertaining and provides basically an example of the shouter. Yes, this is the Trouble with Twitters. Current.com/items/89891774/Trouble_with_twitters.htm. You know what I'll do? I'll provide a link to the show notes. That way you don't have to keep rewinding and trying to type in the web address I just gave you. But anyway, shouters are no fun. They don't get a lot of followers. They usually follow famous people, celebrities, that kind of thing. Now, next, are the causers. These are the people that tweet about nothing but, say, breast cancer or leukemia or whatever it is, whatever cause they have, whatever charity they have. Maybe it's a religion. I don't know. But they have a cause, and they want you involved. They've got to get you involved. They have to raise money for their cause. They have to raise awareness for their cause. They provide no social value. They simply provide information about their cause. Essentially, these are just like spammers, except with guilt. And you know what? That kind of makes it worse. I don't want to follow you for your cause. I want to follow people that tweet about themselves and what they're into and engage in the conversation. Now, you may really like to support breast cancer awareness, but be a real person. Don't just tweet about one thing all the time. And kind of these people sort of have the same thing in common. It's redundancy. It's repetitiveness. The last group in this don't take the social out of my social media topic are the silent. You know the ones I mean. The ones that follow you and you go to their page and they have no tweets. They have no followers either. They simply follow you and others. And actually, I have nothing wrong with these people. Absolutely nothing. Because they don't clutter up my stream. They don't get in the way. They're just interested in reading what I have to say. Maybe that's all they use Twitter for. Maybe they see no reason in broadcasting their own doings, but they are keenly interested in the doings of others. I have no problem with this. They follow their favorite sports teams' tweets or the, you know, ESPN tweets or whatever it is they want to follow, CNN, you know, something like that, news tweets. They follow it to sort of get information fed to them as a mini RSS reader. I have no problem with these people. These people, at least, if they don't have anything to say, they don't bother saying nothing very loudly. You know what I mean? There's another group that I have a problem with, and we'll kind of just cascade in some of these other ones that I've been thinking about. You've got the corporation or the music star, or I don't care who it is. Let's just go with a regular person who wants to follow your tweets. Only their tweets are protected. And I think this is a problem built into Twitter, because they follow you and you say, oh, well, let's see what they tweet about to see if I want them following me, to see them, if I want to bring them into my sphere. But you have to send a request to view their tweets. I don't know, man. If I can't sample what you're tweeting about, how do I know if I want to follow you? How do I know I want to send a request to follow your tweets? Because then, if I don't like it, I'll just unfollow you. And then we're sort of back at square one. And I might block you just for fun, because I can. because I don't want to look like a douchebag. You know, I've talked about this before. You know, you get someone follow you. You get a bunch of people following you, but you don't want to follow back. So you look like a douche because your follower numbers are lower than your follower numbers. However, by blocking people to keep your follower number close to the following number, you are a douche. So which is it? I don't know. And I don't really think you're a douche. I mean, you block people. If you want to keep your numbers similar, then keep your numbers similar. You know, I block the spammers and the linkers and the infomercials and the quoters and the shouters and the causers. And I block those people because I'm making a statement that I think they're taking the social out of my social media, and I don't appreciate it. The silent, I don't block so much. There are some people who follow me that I just let follow me that I don't have any interest in following them because they look like normal people. They just don't interest me. So my followers number is larger than my following number, but it's still relatively small compared to a lot of the other people on Twitter. But here's something I noticed. I was followed by a corporation that was sort of doing the advertising thing, you know, but they were sort of engaged in the conversation too, at least as far as I knew. I said, well, let's go find out basically what they're about. What do they got? What are they tweeting about? So this corporation follows me and I say, okay, I'm going to go to their profile. So I click the link and their tweets are protected. If you're a corporation and you're using Twitter to tout your goods and services, why the heck are your updates protected? Why do people need to send a request to view your corporate updates? I mean, to me, there's something wrong with that. Okay, well, that's enough of that. Let's get to some feedback, shall we? I think that will be a little more fun.
Hey, Indian and Jim. It's Justin Lemaster from thespaceturtle.com, or Chivalry Bean on
Hello,
Twitter.
Bean. Hello,
Bean. I just listened to your latest episode today about Sparky the Vampires, and I like to make fun of Twilight, too. Not so much for the Sparky the Vampires. I mean, that's... My wife read them, and she was kind of under the opinion that she couldn't stop reading them, but she hated Bella because she always made such wrong decisions. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
But I do agree. That's just the way people
girls
act sometimes,
dumb.
You know?
Girls are stupid. Sorry.
Sometimes it could be a book that's a warning. You know, maybe like...
Right, don't do this.
Not how you should act. I don't really...
Right.
I haven't read the books.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how it all turns out.
Badly.
Exactly. But I also really agree with your comments, which were comments on what Mike Menengay had to say. I thought... Well, I hadn't heard that before until you played it. Like, yeah, that's pretty ridiculous. I mean, that's like... Really, the same thing as, like, when, you know, some popular thing comes out and the Christians go like, oh my gosh, this is Satan, let's burn the books, you know,
yeah,
I mean, like, that's really the same reaction.
Burn slice
just
of Simon, no, wait, Twilight, no.
On things. And I thought that was silly. I was wondering where on your new intro, that first clip talking about some kind of atmosphere on a planet. It sounds really familiar, but I can't place it. Just wondering.
That was Sam Rockwell in Galaxy Quest, which I think I mentioned last episode. Yeah, Sam Rockwell in Galaxy Quest. And again, the new clips are from Galaxy Quest.
Where that was from?
Galaxy Quest.
And I haven't seen Avatar yet either.
Uh-huh.
So I keep almost seeing it. I was like, the hype, it was like hype, like, this is a great movie.
Uh-huh.
You should see it.
Uh-huh.
And like, okay, I want to see it, but then I didn't because, you know,
uh-huh.
I just don't go to the movies much. And then it's like the hype died down and then I stopped caring. So I don't know, someday I'll see it. But I do totally agree that 3D and movies like Star Wars or fantasy, sci-fi, I can think of so many movies that would be cool in 3D.
Uh-huh.
So you said on Twitter you'd have another show out tonight. So I might call after that one. And I hope this is proper line because it didn't have a proper intro.
Uh-huh.
I'll check the number when I get home. All right. Bye.
Yeah, I don't have an intro thing for the line because I figured, why bother? I mean, it's just, who cares? apparently you do because you need confirmation that that's the right number. Sometimes I do too. You know, I need confirmation that I'm doing the right thing. But that's pretty much the extent of my feedback. So thanks, Chivalry Bean. Mr. Bean, thank you very much for calling that in. You know, I'll tell you, when Slice of Sci-Fi sort of lost something. And there are two polls out in the new media / podcasting sphere. But see, what happened was, Slice of Sci-Fi, at its current state, is like a bunch of your geeky pals sitting around talking about geeky stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. But there was a certain, I don't know how to say it, a certain paradigm, a certain dynamic when Evo Terra was there. Because Evo's the guy who watches the geeky stuff, but he has enough of the snark in him, enough of the ability to poke fun at himself, to really keep the balance of, hey, we're getting way too geeky here, you know? And not just say making fun of people, but being able to be a geek show poking fun at itself. And Mike sort of the uber nerd and Evo sort of the uber snark. And they just went off each other. And it was a beautiful dynamic. And now you have Evo at 11, which is nothing but snarky and like-minded people. And then you have Slice of Sci-Fi now, which is nothing but geeky. And so it really lost something there. And while I listen, it's not as enjoyable as it used to be, because you get things where people just kind of go off the reservation and they don't have anybody to bring them back to Earth. And so I don't know. It's just, that's my personal opinion. And, you know, it's unfortunate that those two guys aren't together anymore, but, you know, people go their separate ways sometimes and you got to just get over it. So, anyway, I hope that I try to keep people down to earth here on this show. Remember, you can call in your feedback. Please call about Google Buzz and tell me your thoughts about it. Just real quick, call that voicemail line, 206-666-2826. And if you have any other opinions also about Twitter and Hootsuite, please call those in and keep this discussion going. So, I am Indiana Jim. I've stapled my fedora to my head, and I'm riding off into the sunset.
You've been listening to The Adventures of Indiana Jim, a production of Visionary Creative Works. Visit podcast.indianajim.net and leave comments on the blog. Send in your emails and audio feedback to podcast@indianajim.net. I'm Dr. John Small. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.